time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Garcia hits this ball well out to right field. That one could be trouble. It's down. That'll be extra bases. It clears him. A three-run Duro. And Adolis Garcia delivers again against the Astros. It's 6-2.
All right, the Astros falling yesterday in Arlington to the Rangers. Final score 6-2. Game one of this series is the panic button. Is the panic button on?
How can they not score, Vanessa? Good God.
This is
getting very frustrating. The lack of offense that this team is able to put together.
The pitching's okay.
Framber Valdez did what he was supposed to. And if you get a good start from Framber Valdez, I'm sorry. You got to score runs against this Mickey Mouse franchise that's north of you.
They couldn't finish out a really good second inning. Alvarez homer to start that second inning. That was followed by a Yuli double and a Kyle Tucker single. Tucker then stealing second to put runners on second and third with no one out. So that didn't work out. Dunning escaped, getting Diaz to the line out. So it was that was the inning that stood out to me as being like, okay, well, they could really make a pack a punch here.
Yep.
As they say in local news.
Table was set.
And the punch was not packed.
Right. No food was delivered. Then the bullpened. And here we are. It's early. We're not quite 1/16th of the way through the season, but, I mean, another game where they can't score.
I thought we were, last week you said we were 1/10th of the way through the season.
Well, now we're closer to 1/10th of the way through the season. My math was off.
But it was 1/16th.
my math was off. Right. Now, 7-9 through 15 games, so they are close to 1/16th of the way through the season. And, wait, check that. 1/10th. I'm bad at math. Stop shaking your head, Sean.
Our producer, Sean Mapes, is on the...
Ooh, I'm Sean Mapes. I went to St. Pius. I know math.
It's like the real life from The Hangover where he's staring and all the numbers are flying past him trying to count cards.
Except for I don't know what any of them are saying. They may as well be in a different language.
And you're just trying to add and then divide is what you're doing.
I am struggling with math the same way the Astros are struggling at the plate. Boom. Deflected my own issues back to this team. Look, eventually some of these bats are going to wake up, but I just don't see how they keep on struggling this way. What is going on?
To me, I was not worried at all at the beginning of the season, and I made that clear. This is a little more concerning because now, like you said, we're getting further in the season, and the bats are struggling, and then they're struggling just to finish an inning in a successful manner.
Yeah.
So I think it's something that we need to watch out for, but not a good start there in Arlington.
I mean, shoot. Sunday, in that win over the Blue Jays, how many things went in your favor in that game? Where you got Lourdes Gurriel like, biffing a ball and letting it get to the wall. You've got the infield error where on the Jeremy Pena dribbler down the right field line, you got a guy walking in, someone with the bases loaded. And, okay, great. 8 hits. But... what's going on? Top of the order. You're in last night's game, 1-13. And I get it. Maybe it's because you're putting McCormick in the leadoff spot. But I'm just getting more and more frustrated with this. And this team is better than what we have seen thus far. If we were in another city, say Boston or New York, and it was the Red Sox or Yankees struggling like this out of the chute, we would be on their ass. We should be on their ass for this.
Do you think that's a Houston thing? Do you think that is a by regional by market thing?
I think it could be. And I also think it's a, hey, they have been to the ALCS 5 years in a row, including a season where they honestly should not have made the playoffs. We're talking about the 2020 pandemic shortened season. But I got to have other people here with me, right? That are sitting up and they're like, this is way too slow of a start. I get it. You're 15 games into the year. Not the end of the world, blah, blah, blah. But at some point, when are we going to realize that we have just been telling ourselves this, that we actually are watching a team that just is, for whatever reason, not the same as far as being a death star of offensive death. Multiple deaths There's not enough
a lot
death.
Of death. We do want to know what you have to say. Are you worried about the Astros? Do you think this is no big deal? 713-780-3776. Of course, you can tweet us. I'm at Sports Vanessa. He's at Gallant Says. Or you can get at us on our Twitch stream. It was a strong day for Framber Valdez. Held the Rangers to one run unearned at the time. Six strong innings, threw 97 pitches. And that was a season high for an Astros pitcher.
See, that's nice that you got that from Framber Valdez. But you have to take advantage of the good starts that Framber Valdez gives you. And, you know, if you're not taking advantage of a decent start by Justin Verlander over the weekend, the pitching, once again, it's been doing, for the most part, its job this year. Last night, that obviously was not the case when the bullpen came in, because the bullpen's allowing, this Garcia guy, who the Texas Rangers are all of a sudden talking trash with. I got annoyed yesterday because, Vanessa, when I look at the Texas Rangers, I look at a team that, yes, is geographically close to Houston, but I do not recognize them as a rival of the Astros. They are beneath me. They are beneath you. They are beneath all of us. They are nobodies, nothings. They have been nothings since Nelson Cruz puked away the World Series against the St. Louis Cardinals by misplaying a fly ball to right field that should have ended the game, which is hilarious. Classic Rangers. They can't win a World Series. They lose two in a row. They have been nothing, nobodies since then. And yeah, it's one game of this series, but I'm sorry. This is one of those teams that even if they're spending a ton of money over the offseason, you should be bullying and snuffing the life out of. And here you have Bally Sportsnet Southwest, some TV network for the Texas Rangers, is saying Adolis Garcia is the Astros silencer, and they can do it. And this is annoying because to me, I look at them and I'm like Don Draper in an elevator. I never even think about you, but now I have to think about you because they're trying to make this a rivalry again, and it shouldn't be a rivalry
again.
The other
thing is, I like, just from an unbiased perspective, when you talk about names and titles, can you please come up with something better than the Astros silencer?
Yeah, that's not very good.
It's just not good.
No.
Sorry if you live in Dallas-Fort Worth. It's just not good.
No, it's awful. And again, they're trying to stir some stuff up. And here I am being triggered by it because I don't like what the offense is doing. See, the offense is giving me issues. The offense is making me not enjoy my day.
We all must figure out our triggers. All right, let us know if you are worried about the Astros as they head into continue this series in Arlington. Framber Valdez, yeah, Framber looked good. The pitching is the thing that we have not really had to worry about. How do you feel about Lance McCullers Jr.? No timeline on that yet.
Yeah, look, I mean, you're not rushing him, and he's not going to be back till June. So I just feel the same way that I felt yesterday and the day before and the day before. Hopefully he gets back, but that's not helping you get offense, you know? It's ultimately about these guys
bats.
Have to wake up at the plate, and I don't know when that is going to take place, but it has been an unacceptable start to this point in time. Maybe Altuve, when he's eventually back, that'll make things better, but when's that going to happen too? That's, I guess, what I'm maybe a little more nervous about. What's going on with him, and how is he going to look the rest of this year after suffering a hamstring injury?
Jose Altuve still on the 10-day IL. We should know more about that, of course, as that 10-day comes to a close. All right, so the Astros continue the series in Arlington. What are you looking for?
Runs. Scoring. Points. Winning games. I just look at this Rangers team, and I mean, they're 6-10. It's not like they're off to a good start at all. And yeah, you're at the same record, as someone on Twitch points out, as you were at the beginning of this past season. But at the same time, I'm sorry. That at some point, when you take a look just at the win losses in a row and all of the games where they have not scored runs, and then the anomaly is Sunday, where they're getting a lot of help
right
from the Toronto Blue Jays, then, I mean, what's going on here? Two runs, zero runs, three runs, two runs. Yeah, eight, then two. You, for the most part this year, are scoring less than four runs. And this offense is better than that. And this offense should be called out for not doing that every single game that they don't do it.
0123 says, I love Dusty, but last season should have been his last season in Houston. I disagree with that. I think Dusty deserved to be back for another year.
I don't know if Dusty is making the offense better. You know, I look at managers. How much does a manager really have impact-wise on a team? I don't think that Dusty Baker is really the end-all be-all. It's really about, like, these players just have to play. The managers are there just to do what the general manager generally tells them these days, even if it is someone with Dusty Baker.
Because, like, with baseball, you can't control a slump.
No,
it's not like
really.
You can draw up a play to control a slump.
Yeah, I mean, you can send the guy to the minors. That's pretty much it.
Very true. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we continue on this Tuesday. A little NBA action. Somebody that we are very familiar with in Houston getting dunked on by his teammate. Plus, does a certain head coach deserve to lose his job? That's next.
ESPN. 97.5. You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant. We are rolling along on a Tuesday, which Paul and I consider to be the worst day of the week.
Tuesday is the worst day of the week.
I agree
no
with
question.
You. I've had that opinion for a while. It's nice to have somebody else share it.
Here's why. First off, because Monday, at the very least, the weekend just happened, and you probably think on a Monday, you know, any of the bad habits that I had last week, I'm going to change them
Monday
today.
Is a fresh start.
Right. But then Tuesday happens and you're like, damn it.
My
There's
life
still
is
four
still
more
same.
Days.
Yeah.
The week has just begun. So that's why hump day is pretty good. But Friday's number one day. Friday, got to get down on Friday.
Help.
Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. We got Adrian.
We do have Adrian who wants to talk Astros. Thanks for calling in, ma'am.
What's up, Adrian? How you doing?
Morning, young lady. Morning, young sir.
Hello.
Hey.
Now, with that said, I have to blame this on Dusty.
Ooh.
Because spring training, you, I, the world, even the fishing and sea know, it takes Kyle Tucker a month to get started. We all know it takes Altuve 2-3 weeks to get started. Spring training game one, Verlander, playing with a bunch of guys we don't see behind him. Meanwhile, across the mound, Cardinals starter, couple of rookies, and they're starting lineups.
Mm.
For that first week, it was all like that. Meanwhile, our guys are doing whatever they do, knowing it takes this team a while to get started. Why not try something different? The Rangers, I'm with you. I'm going to push the panic button.
Ooh.
Man, I swear, if we meet the A's and they beat us
yeah.
like this,
yeah.
Oh, boy.
Great point.
Oh, boy.
I like it, Adrian.
Great point, Adrian. Thanks for the call.
So there's been some other criticism of Dusty Baker specifically. And, Adrian, I think that's a fair one to say, okay, well, hey, you want to get your bats going as quickly as possible, maybe have the best players out there in spring training. Spring training's weird. I don't know what is the right or wrong way to manage things. Because with pitchers, they'll tell you, yeah, I'm pitching, but I'm not trying to pitch at my best because they're working on things specifically. But with batters, too, yeah, the more reps you would think, the more warmed up you would be. A couple of good points, too, we got from the text line, 713-780-3776, and on Twitch. And from Twitch, it is the baseball fan Mario who doesn't like Dusty Baker's batting order lineups because he feels like they're too righty-lefty dependent. And on top of that his pinch-hitting calls are worse. And if you look at the beginning of last night's game, it is weird to see Chaz McCormick in the leadoff spot. Is that an indictment on the entire lineup? I don't know, but when you see what the results were last
Chaz
night.
Chaz McCormick, former high school basketball star.
See, he's got that going for him.
State champion.
But 3 strikeouts last night. And
yeah.
That's not the guy that you want setting the table. And honestly, until Altuve's back, I mean, it makes, to me, the most sense to put Brantley in the leadoff spot. Brantley's the guy who is delivering the most for you.
And he's being consistent. He's been consistent this season.
Exactly. We actually have somebody else calling in. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Frank, possibly Frank the Tank? Frank, are you a tank?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey.
Yo.
Hey, appreciate it. Listen every day. Hey, so I wouldn't say we pushed the panic button yet as far as the hitting is concerned. I will say this. My son and I, we had never really been big into Kyle Tucker. I know that the first two sample sizes were real small. He got called up from AAA and he didn't do well. And last year was, you know, he did great. But that guy has too many holes in his swing. I think people are starting to figure him out. He's pressing. He's going to batting gloves. As a guy who never switched from batting gloves to non-batting gloves, that's almost, you know, you don't do that. I mean, that just shows how bad he's pressing. And I think Michael Brantley at the leadoff is great. He's a professional hitter. He's by far the best hitter we have on the team. I know I say that with Yulian Altuve in there, but that guy can hit off of anybody at any time. That's what you need. You got to get it going. I still maintain us losing George Springer was the biggest hit to the team because he was the catalyst for this team. As Springer went, we went, and he was going real good for the 2 years before we didn't buy him. And I think Brantley can be that for you right now. You need it. And then, you know, I just, I'd like to see Dusty Baker make some moves and maybe get out of his norm because it ain't working right now. I'll shut up and listen, guys.
I appreciate the call. That's a really interesting perspective of not being all in on Kyle Tucker because he was so hailed last year.
I don't want to be so overreactionary that Kyle Tucker putting on gloves means that he is extremely pressing. That's a little bit too far, but I do get the idea of, hey, he's trying to do too much. But I think that anybody who's a competitive hitter, when you're trying to figure out what the bleep is going on and you have a big slump to start the year, you're going to try different things. He did have three hits in his first game that he put the gloves on. I think it's important to bring that up. Is it
hashtag glove watch?
Right. I mean, is it unconventional? Sure. But I mean, he had three hits again last night, too. So, I mean, Tucker, I feel like Tucker's slump is behind him at this point in time. It was a long one. I'm not concerned about Kyle Tucker. But I will say, as far as the other parts of the lineup right now, and, you know, with some of the decisions that Dusty Baker has been making, I can understand why some people are like, okay, well, what's going on here? Does that mean that Dusty Baker should be fired or something like that? No, I'm not gonna go that far. But I would like to see, perhaps at the very least, let's get Michael Brantley into the leadoff spot, huh?
When you ask about Dusty Baker, the comments are all that he's too old school or that he's outdated is a nicer way to put it, is what someone said. I guess I just see him as being more of a hands-off, like you kind of talked about, manager, where he's not going to, you know, and he's always going to have his guys' backs. But Jake Odorizzi on the mound tonight as the Astros continue their series with the Rangers. Okay, let's move to the NBA as we are in the midst of playoffs. The 76ers, initially with that 3-0 lead, Raptors coming back, baby. Raptors coming back.
And this is what happens.
103-88 last night.
When you have a career choking dog as your second best player, it's not that surprising when the best player is facing lots of attention and that second choking dog, dishonorable basketball player, isn't doing enough. You can understand how, I don't know, a series against a team like Toronto, who really is just like an old version of a team that made it to the NBA championship. All they have still is Pascal Siakam. Toronto has no business having won a game in this series. And yet, Philadelphia, coached by Doc Rivers, notorious for blowing leads as head coach in a series, is now only up 3-2, and I'm loving it.
Toronto absolutely dominated in the paint, despite, you know, the 76ers having freaking Joel Embiid. And Joel Embiid had some thoughts after the game.
Yes, he did.
Here is him talking about our dear sweet James Harden.
Joel.
I've been saying all season since he got here, you know, he just needs to be aggressive and he needs to be himself. That's not really my job. That's probably on coach to, you know, talk to him and tell him to, you know, take more shots, especially if they're going to guard me the way they've been guarding. That's really not my job.
I love when players are honest about how they really feel. We always want that. And that was as honest as it gets, because not only did Embiid say that James Harden needs to be more aggressive, he said, quote, it's not my job, and that that's on Doc Rivers, the head coach. So he really took a little bit of a shot at Doc Rivers as well.
Well, yeah, because someone's got to get on Harden to be more engaged. I mean, you're brought in here to be one of the two catalysts for this offense. And what is it that you're doing? 11 shots over the course of a game, half of them are from outside. What are you doing? Where's the slashing? Where's the driving? Where is the distributing? Okay, 7 assists, but 5 turnovers. This is a guy who, for whatever reason, just doesn't look like the same player that he used to be. And Embiid's going to call him out. Embiid's going to call out Doc Rivers. Embiid is the only person in this entire situation who is, I think, completely removed from criticism, even if he could be better. As you said, the points in the paint number, that's not great. But I wonder how the Sixers look at this situation, because you got Daryl Morey, who is obsessed with James Harden.
Loves him some James.
But this offseason, Harden's going to be a free agent. And what have you seen from James Harden in these playoffs, let alone any playoffs, that would make you think, yeah, I want to invest in this guy long term? And we're not even in the second round of the playoffs. We're talking about James Harden.
First round.
Right, going up against the Toronto Raptors, who suck. The Raptors suck. They
He's
don't
been
matter.
Slow. There have been turnovers, and he has not produced. I mean, every time James Harden joins another team, it's like, oh, here we go. James Harden, championship confirmed.
I just want Philadelphia to bring out the knives. Bring them out. Bring out the switchblade.
You want Eagles fans.
I want that kid that was at the Syracuse Penn State game who pulled out a switchblade and said, I'm from Philly. God. I want those people in the crowds heckling Harden and getting under his skin because he should be doing more. You forced your way out of Brooklyn because you felt like Brooklyn wasn't doing enough for you. And you know what? You might have had a good point on that front, but you got to do something when you go to Philadelphia. You can't just get Chubbo mode in the middle of the season and then not do anything the rest of it without expecting tons of criticism. And if he just doesn't care, fine. That might be his prerogative. But I think that at some point, if this guy has any pride in himself, he's got to just do things, which is what you're paid to do.
You are paid to do things.
Yes, in life, but as a basketball player. Like, do anything.
You are paid to do things.
What's
in life.
That meme where there's the guy and he's got the stick?
He's got the stick.
And he's
come
like,
on.
Dude, come on, do something.
Meanwhile, Nets and Celtics, Kevin Durant finally turning it on. 39 points. The Celtics just defended better.
Yeah, the Nets.
Point blank.
The Nets are also in that same kind of situation. Durant finally had his good game, but, you know, and we'll hear from them later on because I don't think we have enough time left in the segment.
No, but we'll loop to it back in the show. And yeah. I like what J.J. Redick brought up this morning on ESPN. He said, this is a cautionary tale about roster construction.
Yes.
You need two-way players on the court.
You need two-way players, and you need players who will play.
Right. And will actually
like Ben
play.
Simmons
oh, like putting
isn't.
On a uniform and playing?
Yeah. Well, Ben Simmons did put on a uniform. I mean, Ben Simmons looked fashionable. As fashionable as me the last 2 days? I don't know, but... Nope. Ben Simmons did look good sitting on the bench doing absolutely nothing as he, of course, recovers from his tremendous struggles with mental health.
All right. We're gonna loop back to this, of course, like we said later in the show, and we will get to Juan in the next segment talking about Dusty Baker. But, guys, if you own your home, listen to me. It's your friend Vanessa. Our friends at TGS Insurance Agency are going to deliver big savings, and you don't even have to talk to an agent. You know you're paying too much for your home insurance, but you probably don't shop for better rates because it's a big hassle. It doesn't have to be a hassle anymore thanks to TGS. They have a new system. It instantly shops over 36 carriers, and you get a quote within 15 seconds just with a single text message. So get out your phone, text MONEY, M-O-N-E-Y, to 232323. Send back your home address, and you get that full quote with great coverage in 15 seconds. This company's legit. The savings are legit. The online rating is nearly perfect. And guess what? Their last customer from last year, guys, saving over $870 on home insurance. I get it. This is boring. You don't like shopping for home insurance, but TGS makes it the easiest it's ever been, and you're only a text away from massive savings. One more time, text MONEY to 232323. Get your home insurance quote and save big today.
ESPN 97.5.
I assume you knew... You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
You should tune in on Twitch because I've really been working on my arms in the gym.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm wearing a, like, mock, like, turtleneck-ish tank top thing today.
Well, all those horny bastards are going to come running right now. Absolutely.
Paul and I both look semi-nice because we're going to John McClane's luncheon after this.
A luncheon.
For a legend.
Why don't they call it a lunch? I've always wondered.
I think a luncheon is more formal. Like a luncheon is more like there's speakers, there's going to be nicer food. It's not just like sitting down.
Could be lunch.
And eating lunch.
Could be brunch.
Brunch. That's what you would like.
I like brunch.
Juan in Cyprus has some comments on Dusty Baker. Juan, we appreciate you listening to Vanessa and Galan, and we appreciate you holding your call for a couple minutes.
Hey, you guys are one of my favorite shows now that you came on. I got to say, I'm not a Dusty fan.
Thank you.
Not a Dusty fan. Okay.
Here's the reason. Here's the reasoning. Have you ever noticed that he never has the same lineup through a sweep, possible sweep? He's always resting players. He worries too much about injuries. You don't get hurt by playing. You get hurt by not eating right, not sleeping right, not stretching appropriately. And he is so worried about... He was resting people on the third day of the season, and it's ridiculous. He is so good with just winning 3 out of 4 or 2 out of 3, where Hinch tried to win every single game. pros don't like to sit down. It's a rhythm game. It's rhythm. It's you know, constant repetition. And when somebody gets hot, you'll notice he'll sit shortly. That's why I don't like him.
I don't know if that's 100% true as far as they will sit shortly, but I get what you're saying, Juan, 100%, because...
Interesting theory there.
The rest, it doesn't add up. At this point of the year, it is annoying to see. And Dusty Baker, though, seems like... I don't know if it's fair to direct all the criticism at Baker for this, because Baker seems old school to the point where he would want all these guys to play as much as possible. I do, and everyone should always wonder, how much say does a manager actually have?
Yeah, in baseball, I think it's a little different than like a head coach in the NBA or football.
Exactly, Vanessa, because you have general managers upstairs that are crunching numbers and are trying to determine, hey, what is the optimal amount of time that this player should play over the course of a season? They bring in crazy folks with mathematical equations to determine what is and what isn't, all sorts of advanced statistics that I am too stupid or perhaps too bored to actually dive into.
You're not enough of a nerd.
And I am a nerd.
I don't mean nerd in a bad way.
I am a nerd, but not that much of a nerd. Nope. No siree. Another comment. This is a text, 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. Hey, guys. I missed the playoffs starting rotation for next week. Wait, the playoffs ain't next week? The season just started? Mm. Oh, okay. At what point are you going to realize that that is just lame? This is a team that has made it to five straight ALCS. You were allowed to be frustrated with the start.
Also, we are a sports talk radio show, so we are talking about sports.
That too.
That always gets me.
But we have expectations.
Yes.
And you should have to meet the expectations. If you have a significant other, it's been 5 years. All of a sudden, there's like a month where said significant other is not doing the things that you have sort of expected them to do. I'm not talking about that. Get your mind out of the gutter, Vanessa.
Sean went there too.
Okay, fair enough. Fine.
I'm just guessing.
I'm the non-horny person on the show right now. That's okay. It's fine.
Your significant other is not doing the things they used to do.
And what a change. Paul's not the horny one.
Right.
This could be a matter of
go horns.
Doing the dishes, cleaning up the apartment, cleaning up after yourself.
Sure.
This doesn't have to be that far, but I will say, I mean, the lack of offensive firepower right now. Yeah, it is a lot like, I don't know, never having the relations, if you will. It is a dry spell, an actual dry spell. So fine, bonk me now because I am thirsty for runs, hits. They're nice. Who would have thought?
They are nice. We'll certainly see how the Astros progress and talk about them throughout the show. Juan, again, thank you for the call. All right, Deebo Samuel, will he stay or will he go? Probably needs to happen within the next 24 hours. This is what they were saying on NFL Network this morning, Tom Pelissero, because if he's going to be traded, he needs to get his new contract, get his physical before the draft, and then the 49ers can take those draft picks from the Jets or Giants or whoever and adjust accordingly. It doesn't seem like the 49ers are completely out on trading Deebo Samuel. It doesn't seem certainly like they want to. John Lynch said, quote, "We are willing to listen," in the media press conference, but that we, quote, certainly don't want to trade Deebo Samuel.
Why would you trade away one of your best players when Trey Lance, who has barely played as a quarterback, is likely to be your starting quarterback next season? Why would you trade away Deebo Samuel? How does it make any sense? That's basically the one question I have right now. So if you're the 49ers, just continue to hunker down. Hold. Like you're the Scottish holding up stakes against the British cavalry during the Battle of whatever the hell from Braveheart. It's from Braveheart.
Go Braveheart.
Yeah. You got to watch Braveheart. It's a great movie. But anyway, I mean, just hold. Just keep on holding. I mean, he doesn't have any leverage. He doesn't. I mean, he doesn't have the kind of funds to just sit back on. And if he wants to get that big payday, I suppose he can sit out games, but let's actually see him sit out games.
He will never be used the same way he's used with the 49ers. I think that any team obviously would love to have him and his little half wide receiver, half running back, but he says he doesn't want to do that. So,
but he hasn't outright said it. Like, it's been intimated.
But I think my theory on that is when your agent talks to somebody and lets them know that it comes through the grapevine, through the Albert Breers and the Tom Pelisseros and the Ian Rappaports. I mean, they're not just making that up. They're getting it from someone close to the vest.
That's fair. But what if once he gets paid, don't you think he's going to be a little more willing to do those things again?
I think money can make you do a lot of things.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So what? What? I'm just thinking about things that money could make you do. Like play wingback again. Listen, all I'm saying here is that once he gets paid, it's not like he's going to stop playing this wide back position that he supposedly takes issue with, which is kind of funny because that's the way he's presenting it himself right now is, no, I'm just not doing that anymore, at least what we're hearing through all those sources that you talked about.
John Lynch also said that there is a possibility that Jimmy G could be throwing by June. And that there might be a spot for him on their roster. He hasn't said that they're for sure shipping him out or not. It certainly seems like that would be the case, but
they might cut him.
They make, yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of money to have on the books, and I get it. I mean, it doesn't really hamstring you at this point in time. You've already gotten through free agency, but I'd imagine you want to have a little bit of flexibility going forward, and it's kind of awkward to have Jimmy Garoppolo still on the roster while Trey Lance is supposed to take things over. Because I imagine there's a lot of players still for the 49ers who are like, well, look, we'll see with Trey Lance, but Jimmy G's been our guy. Which is weird, but he does have a pretty good amount of vocal support in San Francisco. Whether it's George Kittle or others, people have stood up for Jimmy Garoppolo in a way that they haven't for Baker Mayfield.
Oh, or Kyler Murray or any of the other diva quarterbacks that have made waves. Jimmy G, definitely with that good reputation. One of the things that stood out to me when I read this transcript from John Lynch's press conference, quote, "We've been consistent since we've been here in that we will listen on just about anyone. That's something we'll always do." So he didn't provide too much explanation, but his answer was basically, we're going to listen, and we know how the NFL works. It's a business. Everybody has a price. Mm-hmm. It's just the long and the short of it.
Yeah.
Even somebody like Deebo Samuel.
Everyone has a price to do anything.
Oh, silly me trying to talk about the NFL.
Well, silly me trying to talk about, you know, what money will make you do, no, Vanessa.
That's true.
It's on my mind
I
now.
Yeah. But I think everybody has a price. And I think that, you know, if you're looking at weapons for Trey Lance, there's no better weapon than Deebo Samuel. But we know what age we are right now with player empowerment. And that if you want out, it seems like in this day and age, you can get out of town.
And if you want in, you can be like Kyrie Irving and think that you will be in charge of personnel decisions next year, even though you sat out for pretty much an entire season.
We'll be talking later within the next half hour about Deshaun Watson, something that I think you all will find interesting. So you don't want to miss that. But coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to discuss Nick Caserio, the trade master, and some fun storylines to watch for draft night. There's a little bit of local flavor here. Stay tuned.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
And we are in the middle of what is a fun week. We are in the middle of the final rumors, final mock drafts, whispers. Here's what I'm hearing. Here's what you're hearing. Sources tell me week in the NFL as we approach the draft this weekend in Las Vegas.
A whole lot of poop in the air.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it is just a lot of BS. There's a modicum of truth to some of the things that you're seeing, but all it takes is one pick to make a lot of that stuff go away. So I can't wait for this thing to start. This is generally, the days leading up to the draft are generally, Vanessa, my least favorite when it comes to it, because I just want the damn thing to start. I love it once it starts. The build up to me, though, it gets tiresome, if you will.
It does. I mean, it's what every single program is talking, morning program in America. What do you call them? Steal your pizza, yell at your...
Speak for your pizza.
Speak for your cold pizza or something mm-hmm. like that.
Sometimes it's cold.
It is what every single show talks about. But to your point, we don't know unless it's going to happen. The thing that I think will make this year's draft fun is the predictability, and we are going to give you our mock drafts, first couple of picks, within the next hour of the show, so make sure you stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, Texans GM Nick Caserio making some moves, blockbuster moves, not really. Patriots getting a fifth round pick from the Texans in exchange for sixth and seventh rounders.
Well, hang on. Is it that way? I forget. Shoot. I don't know which way the trade went. Off the top of my head, I thought the Texans got a fifth round pick from the Patriots for a sixth and a seventh. And I was like, yeah, that's right. That's right, Patriots. That's right.
You're right. I said that wrong. Patriots deal their fifth round pick to the Texans for their sixth and seventh round
picks. I never know how to write the way a trade happens. It's easy to get super dyslexic with it. So I think that's actually on my bad for writing that into the rundown the way that I did. It's crazy, though. How about that, Patriots? Yeah. Oh, yeah. You think you know what you're doing? We just stole a fifth round pick from you for a sixth and a
Field
seventh.
Field Yates says the Texans receive pick 170. The Patriots receive picks 183 and 245.
Fleeced.
So we're really getting into the weeds here.
Fleeced. That's a fifth round pick, you idiots. Yeah, take that, Boston.
But you love the Patriots.
Yeah, I know. I just think it's funny to talk about a trade and like, oh, this was a fleeced. It's a weird move to make now. That's all I know. Like, why are you making a trade for a fifth round pick days before the actual draft takes place, unless you just maybe want to consolidate the picks that you have, which you have a bunch of them at this point.
The only thing that I can think of is, and I have heard draft analysts talk about this, is that you can feel like you have too many draft picks in one draft, and like you want more of those draft picks maybe at a later date, or you know, you want to be able to focus on the rookies that you have and not have 10 new guys walking in the building, etc. That's the only thing I can think of, because it is a very random trade.
Yeah, especially because it's a couple of days
and it
before.
Was on a Monday.
Right. And this would make a lot more sense. Hey, it's early Saturday morning and
right,
the Patriots want more picks, or the Texans want to move up to go get some random guy in the fifth round that has fallen to them. I know some people were joking. Oh, the Texans already know there's a prospect that'll be available for them in the fifth round. Nick Caserio stays king. Genius mode.
I would be interested, though, when Nick Caserio has his first post-draft press conference. I'm sure that there will, at that point, be many other storylines to talk about. But I would like to hear, what was the thought process behind this? Are you guys trying to focus on more draft picks instead of just have all of the draft picks? Were there certain players in that portion of the round that you really liked, and who were you eyeing that was worth making such a kind of random trade for, like
right.
we said, on a Monday before the draft?
And of course we won't get actual
answers.
We will
not get the real answer.
This is something I want. Have you watched the Key and Peele television program?
Love Key and Peele.
You know how
hated when it got canceled.
There was a Barack Obama anger translator.
Yeah.
Could we get like a cocky Nick Caserio translator? Because Nick's obviously going to be polished and not say anything, because he's keeping things close to his vest.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good joke. I said that yesterday on Jake Asman's show. He has a YouTube show called creatively and appropriately named The Jake Asman Show.
Did he not get it?
And I said close to the vest and no laughs. And I said at the end when he was plugging my social media, I said, if you follow me on social media, just know that you're going to get great jokes like that that Jake Asman didn't laugh at. Jake Asman, if you're watching, it's fine. I'm not mad. I just am disappointed.
Okay, fair enough. I want a cocky Nick Caserio to the side of Nick Caserio. And I want him saying like, hey, don't mess with the vest because I'm the best. Just like in the background, just constantly
and
talking trash.
He's from the Midwest. Wicca, wicca, what? He is from Ohio.
Okay, he's from the... Yeah. So maybe we give him like an extreme Minnesotan accent or something like that.
No, he's from Ohio. Why do you have a Minnesota accent?
You have one. Everyone in the Midwest has a Minnesota accent.
There is nothing Minnesota about my accent.
Right there. It sounded like Minnesota.
That was intentional.
I don't know.
Do I sound like I'm from
Minnesota?
People
can't see you on the radio. Well, now you do. So, I mean...
Sean, somebody step in here. Sean, do I
sound
like I'm from...
No, I think Paul is being racist against Midwesterners.
Yeah!
He's painting with a real broad brush all across the Great Plains and the Rust Belt.
I mean, we are the flyover states.
Yes.
We grow the food. We have bonfires.
But mostly
may
the
not
flyover
fancy,
states. Right.
But we're not all the same.
I don't know. All Midwestern people look the same to me. You're all just a bunch of cornfields. That's it.
But Minnesota isn't even in the same ballpark as like Ohio, Indiana, Illinois.
It's not? I thought they're all like,
but they're not the same.
Minnesota is
extremely cold.
Oh,
it's got a little bit more of a north
as opposed to Indianapolis, which is not extremely cold.
No, it's not. Minneapolis
Chicago, has a super cold.
Northern Midwest culture. They're really into hockey. They talk a little bit differently. Okay. Every state is different.
You're trying to
say that just because I'm from the Midwest, I sound like I'm from Minnesota?
I mean, listen, we have the audio evidence to go back to. You said Minnesota. I don't know why you did. Were you trying to
Day
make
one,
a point?
Donna on Twitch says Vanessa does not have an accent. Thank you. No accent whatsoever.
Minnesota and Ohio are 700 miles apart.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's like all cornfields in between. There's nothing there.
No, in between is a little place called Chicago, Illinois.
Yeah, thank you.
It is?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Geography, am I right?
Wait, it's 700 miles apart?
They're not even in the same...
From Ohio to Minnesota.
Like, saying that me and Nick... I'm from Indiana, Nick Sarah's from Ohio. Saying that we're from Minnesota is like...
Well, it is. Like that.
Saying you're from North Carolina.
Nebraska is right next to all of these things, too. And so is Iowa.
Help.
It's like the Midwest, it's, you know, there's so little things there. It's like you're really close to each other.
Stop appropriating my culture. That is all I have to say.
Listen,
we are canceling Paul today.
I'd love to hand Paul a blank U.S. map and just tell him to fill in where he thinks the states are.
I'm just going to draw like a big squiggly mark over the middle western part of the map and say like, this doesn't matter.
Yeah, who cares? Corn? Question mark.
Sell to Canada. It's fine.
You know what? You've never lived in the Midwest.
Thank God.
No, you've never lived in the Midwest. You have lived, you're from Boston. You
lived on both coasts.
You went to high school in Tampa, right?
High school.
You went to high school in Tampa.
You did. Yes, I went to high school in Tampa. St. Petersburg, to be specific.
You went to high school in Tampa, and then you lived in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
You've lived in Houston. You've never lived in the Midwest. You've never given it a chance.
No, because I want to be by the beach.
No.
Look at this tan.
Go to the Midwest, enjoy a low cost of living, amazing food, friendly people, and you'll love it.
But, I mean, it's a flyover state. Do they have airports?
Okay.
In the Midwest?
Moving on to the Texans. The Texans make that trade yesterday, and of course we know they have the number 3 pick and the number 13th pick in that first round. We'll be doing our mock draft on Vanessa and Gallant later.
It's interesting that this year's draft, Vanessa... 8 teams have 2 first-round picks. That's the most ever, and by a lot. Like last year, or excuse me, 2020, I think there were last year there were 6 teams with 2 first-round picks, and that's happened in 1989, 1974, and 1973. It's going to be interesting because of that, because I feel like that means that there's a lot of teams that definitely would, I think if they had their wishes, they would rather maybe use those multiple first-round picks to trade up, but it doesn't seem like anybody wants to really trade up for some reason right now. And I wonder why that is.
Adam Schefter had tweeted that the other day, that this was a draft where teams were actively wanting to trade back instead of trading up.
Yeah.
Maybe it has to do with the lack of the quarterback, you know, star-studded class that this is. It's not. You have Malik Willis. Some project him going at 2. Some project him going at 32. So maybe it's the unpredictability. But yeah, Adam Schefter had said that as well.
If you have 2 first-round picks, I think there's just a lot of pressure on you to hit both of them because... that becomes very unaffordable after at the end of the contract. And I think the good thing is for a couple of these teams that have the multiple first round picks, specifically the Texans, the Giants, the Jets. Okay, there's not really, I think, a lot of pressure on those 3 teams to necessarily be successful now. But if you take a look at some of the other teams that are drafting in the first round, I mean, you're Philadelphia. You still have, I mean, you traded away one of them, but you still have multiple first round picks left. And you're in this weird spot where, okay, well, what kind of a difference maker are you really going to find at that spot? Because you need some more. Philadelphia's in this spot where they're a middle of the road franchise. They're 2 first round picks. Is that going to change things? Is that going to make things differently? So it's, I think a lot of these teams would rather just be able to package those picks and turn it into just 1 pick as opposed to having the 2 of them.
And we've seen the spurts of potential from Jalen Hurts for sure.
Yeah.
So to give him some weapons and add a better defense, I think would make a huge difference. Okay. We're going to go through some of the other scenarios later with the NFL draft throughout the show. So stay tuned for that. But coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we recap the Astros weekend, what we think is wrong with the offense, plus some NBA storylines that you don't want to miss. That's next.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.